The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.
Welcome to the podcast on Thursday, the 25th of October, 2018. On the podcast today, I have Ian Smith, Chief Executive Officer of 1PM Group. That's OPM ticker. And Ian talks about the statement to be read out at the annual general meeting for the current year that states they are trading in line with market guidance. We also go over the business generally. Plus, I also have Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com, covering the following companies. Debenhams, who announced a big profit warning today. WPP Group, that's WPP. And Lloyds, which is up today. And in fact, Debenhams is up. And also, I have, of course, two lists. Top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours, and the top five most liked RNSs. You can see the top 10 of these lists on the front page of Vox at voxmarkets.co.uk.
Vox Markets is an online community of investors that runs a free mobile and desktop platform that allows you to track news and updates about any UK-listed company, offering RNS push notifications, detailed charts, pricing data, and much more. Find out more at voxmarkets.co.uk/app.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Ian Smith, Chief Executive Officer of 1PM Group. That's OPM ticker. Ian, thanks for joining me again.
Hello, Justin. Good to talk to you.
Now, you've issued a statement that's going out ahead of the annual general meeting, and it seems quite bullish. And I thought it was quite good to sort of get that out. In this market, the stock market is in a bit of a turbulent time. And also, I mean, we've seen a lot of distress on the high street, especially big retailers like Debenhams announcing today. But we'll get into the details of that in a bit. Before we do, Ian, for people not aware of the company, can you summarise what is 1PM all about, please?
Yeah, certainly. So 1PM, the name 1PM stands for one payment monthly. So obviously that gives you a clue that we're into finance. We're a non-bank specialist finance provider focusing on the UK SME sector. What we've done strategically is to set our stall out to be a multi-product provider for all of the finance products that small businesses in particular require. So that's asset finance for equipment, it's vehicles, it's loan finance for working capital, and invoice finance. So that's invoice discounting and factoring for small business, providing all the services, really, the small business financing services that in many ways the major high street banks no longer provide at the very smaller end of the scale.
Yeah, and just a quick overview. I mean, I'm looking at your results, your final results throughout this year. You're doing very well, it seems like. A turnover of 30 million, pre-tax profit of 7.8. Yes. So it's looking quite good, isn't it?
Yes, it is. I think what's important about those results to the 31st of May is that captures the full extent of the buy and build strategy that we've been implementing over the past 3 years to put this multi-product service together, and yet very pleased with those numbers. Over 140 million of business origination during the year to 31st of May, and origination means new deals as far as we're concerned. And we operate a model where we put some of that on our own balance sheet. You know, we take risk ourselves by lending our own money, and we broke some of that on to other funders. And what that 140 million of origination yields is interest income and commission income, and that's what's behind that 30 million of revenue that we reported last year. And as you say, just under 8 million of pre-tax profit. So that was very good growth on the previous year. And we're expecting to see some further growth in the course of the current year.
Yeah. And do you know what? I was looking at CNBC, you know, business channel in America, because the American markets, our markets are very volatile at the moment. And it's reporting season out there. And they're saying companies are getting hammered. If companies don't put out any news at all, they get hammered. If they put out bad news, they're going through the floor. If they put out decent news, they sort of stay where they are if they're lucky. But it's companies with, forward sort of transparency. And I suppose that's what your AGM statement's all about going today, isn't it? So take us through what you're saying here.
Yeah, so today's the annual general meeting, and of course that kind of draws a line under those results that we were just talking about. It's the sort of the last step in the year-end process in terms of approving the accounts, etc. But we're already 4 months into the new financial year, so one third of the way through. I think it's entirely appropriate that the chairman provides an update on current trading, and the statement is simple in itself, but very pleasing in that it's saying that we are trading in line with market expectations for this current financial year. And that's good news. I mean, that's very good news. And it's because I think there is an underlying resilience in the UK economy at the sort of smaller end of the SME scale. I mean, I've said it before, but genuinely believe it's the case that SMEs are the engine room of the UK economy. And through previous sort of economic cycles, we've seen a good degree of resilience. In many ways, that performance goes under the radar. But small businesses in the UK are trading well, and we're seeing that coming through in the demand for our products and services, which means we're able to report these numbers in line with expectations.
Yeah, and I mean, what's your general feel? I mean, like I said, it's, you know, there's a lot of companies on the high street, especially retailers, are having struggling a bit. But as far as the businesses you're in contact with and dealing with, what's the general consensus there? Because obviously we've got lots of worries at the moment. You've got Brexit, trade tariffs, all this kind of stuff playing into the mix. What's your thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, there are sort of headwinds that are causing a lot of uncertainty. But I think when it comes to small, perhaps independently owned businesses, either on the high street or small businesses on industrial estates, you know, car garages, for example, and small distribution outlets, they just have to get on with their day-to-day business. You know, they can't afford to sit in our hands and wait and see what the outcome of some of these macro events are. And as I say, we've seen that in previous recessions. There's a level of resilience, which is all about just getting on and running their businesses. And that's what we're seeing across the board. Clearly, there is some bad news out there, as you just referred to. There's some of the major retail outlets around the UK and some of the kind of the chain restaurants. We've seen a lot of bad news in those sectors recently. We typically don't lend to those sectors. We typically lend to the smaller independent companies, maybe the one or two outlets. And what we see, as I say, is a good degree of resilience and spirit in terms of getting on and running their businesses, growing them in the best way they can, and dealing with issues as they come down the track. Mm-hmm. And I think for a business like ours, what's very important in lending to those smaller businesses is that you have spread, and we do have spread across many, many different industrial business segments. We do many, many small deals. That's the nature of what we do. So leasing and loans averaging around sort of £10,000 to £15,000 each. So we're not lending significant amounts of money to some of these larger sectors that are currently feeling exposed and having a tough time.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, well, Ian, one final thing to do. If someone's listening to this, likes the sound of what you're doing, but are not yet following the story, give them three quick reasons why they should hit that follow button on your page on Vox and add you to their watch list, please.
Yeah, well, the first reason is that we're meeting an unmet need in that SME market. As I mentioned before, the banks are struggling, frankly, to provide the support that some of the smaller businesses in the UK need. So those companies are coming to specialist finance companies like ourselves. So there's a very significant market for us to pursue. So good growth opportunity. The second is good visibility in our numbers. You mentioned it earlier. With £140 million worth of lending, there's about £20 million within that number that is unearned income. That's the revenue that will come through in the current financial year and next year, so good visibility of earnings. And thirdly, we pay a dividend. We are a growth company. We see opportunities for further growth, but we're also rewarding our shareholders with a dividend. So it's a one-third interim and two-thirds final dividend, and we've signaled a progressive dividend over the next 3 years. So for those reasons, yeah, do follow us on Vox Markets.
Excellent stuff. Good to chat to you, Ian, and hopefully we're catching up in the not-too-distant future. Thank you very much.
Pleasure, Justin. Thank you.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite.
And joining me on the podcast right now is Chris Bailey, founder of FinancialOrbit.com. You all right, Chris?
Yeah, very good, thanks. Very good. Well, I say very good. Of course, the markets have been, what did I read the other day? Worst October in the States, I think, since sometime in 2009. So,
yeah, that's
not exactly a brilliant backdrop, is it?
But no, exactly. They've been worthy of these. I saw something like the worst performance since 2008 and all this stuff, and now the Nasdaq's in correction territory. It is, at the moment, the markets are worthy of those stat headlines, aren't they? They're coming back, historical headlines. They're beating all-time worsts. Or at least, you know, recent worsts. And it's tricky. I said today on a tweet, which I'm a bit red-faced now, really. Not particularly. But I said, you know, in today's market, if you release no news, you pretty much, the share price goes down. If you release good news, you're lucky to stay where you are. If you release bad news, you're going through the floor. I said, think about Debenhams today. They're going to announce their biggest loss ever, 500 million. They've got debt pretty much 320 million, which is three times their actual valuation. And I'm looking at Debenhams now, and they're up like 10%. What's going on? So here we are. Yeah.
The thing is, of course, you know, I'm reminded by the famous Warren Buffett. I think he borrowed it from Benjamin Graham, quote of, you've got to be greedy when others are fearful. Mm-hmm. And we all know shares, that there's this huge fear and greed influence and element on them, particularly in the shorter term. So you take something like Debenhams, which, you know, you would have to be hiding under some stone in a barren desert or something like that not to know that it's had a 1,001 problems. I mean, if you go to the store, it's all right, but it just doesn't feel as if, as we've talked about before, the sort of company that you would create if it didn't exist already. Mm-hmm. And as you say, too much debt, that's always the most biggest killer of equity value, always. Too much debt, a product, a sort of a strategy, a retail franchise which is struggling, lack of footfall, we're all changing to online, etc., etc. It seems to be in the wrong place, doing the wrong things in the wrong way. So Kell's surprise, the share is down absolutely massively, 90%+ over the last few years. So, you know, it's call option money. And the thing is, in today's update, there is at least a plan. You know, the plan is, it seems to me, as if to close over a third of the stores, to focus inevitably, to cut the CapEx budget, to make sure that they can survive, and then they keep their fingers crossed. Mm-hmm. And if you look at the share price today, it's just a call option. You know, it's not an investment. It's just a pure punt on whether they will exist and actually at some point in the future pay a dividend to investors or make a bit of money to justify a rating which allows the shares to recover a tiny bit. You know, to be honest, it's a bit like having a punt on the outsider on the 320 at Haydock Park or something. It's no better or worse than that. So I'm not surprised in a way the shares gone up, in the sense that I guess it could have been even worse, and they could have been saying, look guys, we're just going to give up the ghost and close all the shops or something.
Yeah, well, there is, I was looking at it, and they made a £33 million pre-tax profit. That's before exceptional items. Now, their non-cash exceptional write-downs of £512 million. So that brought their overall sort of loss just below £500 million. But so maybe that's not too bad if they are one-offs. But there is that worry of the debt, like you say. That, you know, the debt is still three times the size of their valuation, which is it's a big anchor dragging them down, isn't it? You know?
Which makes, as I say, the share just a complete call option. It's just going to flick around, you know, proportionately, massively on any good or bad news. My guess, how does this all work out eventually? I think the exceptional costs are going to come in every year, because I think every year they will decide that they need to cut more stores from their network. So I think that's a permanent thing. The big issue probably is whether either, number one, there's some kind of debt for equity swap, i.e. some way that they can reduce the debt burden, or number two, somebody buys the company on the basis that they believe, perhaps in private ownership or in conjunction with somebody else, they can do a better job. And obviously you've got people like Mike Ashley historically who've been sniffing around buying shares and stuff like that. So, you know, we'll have to see. My feeling is, though, if you're a fundamental investor, you can leave this one well alone. If you're an absolute punter and just believe there's a chance that something might happen, good luck. You know, it, as I say, it's like a horse racing bet on an outsider. If it comes off, you know, you do absolutely great. But most probabilities will state that, unfortunately, this one's in permanent decline, and equity investors are going to be effectively wiped out over time.
Yeah, that was wholly unpredictable to me. But what is? I've been looking at other sort of stocks falling today, and generally, if you release news that isn't exceptionally good, you pretty much take a little bit of a beating, I think, in this market. It's best to just be quiet. And, you know, yeah. I mean, well, WPP are down, aren't they?
That's right. And obviously, it's funny, isn't it? They're an advertising company, and the key to advertising, of course, is saying stuff. Yeah. And they've come up with a quarter three trading update today, and it's a mess. And the trouble is, when you look at WPP, it used to be the world's largest advertising company, not anymore because of the shocker they've had over the last year. You know, the legendary founder CEO, Martin Sorrell, left, was forced out effectively. And really, they've been struggling since because, unsurprisingly, the big trouble with advertising is the assets walk out the door each evening. And because it's a people's business. And Martin Sorrell had that Rolodex, that Filofax of fantastic contacts. And, you know, he started up his own company. Unsurprisingly, either some people have shifted to him, not too many, but some. But more importantly, all of their big competitors around the world have seen a great opportunity to come in and say, well, guys, we haven't had all this management angst and other issues. We can offer you a great service. Come to us. And, you know, there's been quite a lot of that. So their revenues are down slightly. It's been impacted also by some changes in the advertising market. We all know that advertising progressively is shifting away from newspapers and billboards to sort of digital formats and related. That's had a bit of a negative impact too. So you put that all into the mix, change of management, competitors getting more competitive, advertising structurally changing. It's been a mess. And today's announcement, you know, they're still 2 months away from their strategic review. The strategic review, which was going to work out how on earth they were going to crack on in a post-Martin Sorrell world. So there's a vacuum there, which is very apparent in the results. They're talking about simplifying the business, selling off some stuff, all very, very sensible things to do. The trouble is people are going to say, look, let's sell now and see what's going to happen later. My feeling is the first time you look at this stock is the strategic review, which, as I say, is in December. It's going to drift even after today's 15-odd% share price beating today. I'm afraid it's going to drift until then. Certainly, I'm going to take my view on what to do. I don't hold the stock, but you know, I'm not looking to bottom fish here. I'm going to take a look at it again in December when they come out with their new plan.
Yeah, well, I remember the trouble started happening even when he was there, because I remember them saying like something like something ridiculous, that they're behind the curve on the digital advertising and that's why they're suffering. I thought, well, you should be ahead of the curve on that. You are an advertising agency. You know, everyone else is seeing digital advertising, you know, Facebooks and all those people doing very well. You should be on top of that. And then, of course, there was a scandal about him, then he sort of left. But he certainly didn't leave on good terms, is he? But yeah, I'm surprised how behind the curve they were, really.
Well, the trouble is, advertising is a fluid industry. And actually, if you look, even today with a balance sheet that's got $5 billion of debt, which I think they know is a bit too much, they're still acquiring companies. Because as I say, advertising's a business where the assets walk out the door each day. And hence, good new people doing good new things tend to be acquired by these bigger companies over time. And obviously, digital is at the forefront of that. You've had some, you know, initially it was a lot of smart people doing weird stuff, you know, in terms of programming and coding and whatever else. And that's become much more mainstream. And hence, these people have been bought in by companies like WPP. I think the trouble is you've got to manage that process. And hence, sometimes you do get behind the curve. Alternatively, you overpay for things which ultimately don't prove up as much as you hope. So yeah, I think it's been a bit of a problem for them. Additionally, some of their big clients, some of the big consumer staple companies, you know, the Unilevers of this world, the Nestles and whomever else, they've been chopping and changing their advertising budgets too. There is a bit of price disinflation in there, and as a consequence, guess who gets hurt by that? It's your WPPs and related. So a bit of a perfect storm. You know, the change of management doesn't help, structural changes in the industry, and hence a share price that has been under pressure big time, more than halved in the last year. Frankly, it's not a time to bottom fish. Let them come out and tell you what they're going to think and do going ahead first, and you can take your sort of your judgments and your valuation analysis from that. That comes in December. It's a drift until then. I'm staying away.
That's it. So when you get that 16% drop, that's close to a what? For a $7.5 billion, 11 billion, wow. That is like over $1 billion in value, isn't it?
It is, but it's all about the valuation you apply to it. Now, I did a few rough numbers this morning, and it's a bit difficult because you've got a lot of moving parts. But, you know, it's an 11 and change billion market cap company, as you say, Justin. Mm. It's got $5 billion of debts. So that's an EV of $16.5 billion, if a maths is any good. And the thing is, I don't think they're going to make even $1.5 billion of profit this year, judging by their comments today. So that's still a double-digit EV/EBIT ratio. Now, for me, I know that sounds a bit geeky and mathematical and whatever, but if you're looking for a recovery play in an industry which is quite GDP sensitive, you probably want a single-digit EV/EBIT ratio. We're not quite there yet. So I'm waiting to see what they're going to say and their plans for the next few years. But certainly they're talking about selling their stake in the Kantar business, which I think is smart because they've got to start cutting that debt burden, starting to sharpen up this company a bit. I think it's going to drift until December. Wait until then.
How much debt did you say they had?
$5 billion of debt.
All right, okay. All right, yeah.
So, you know, that's not too bad. I've seen companies in a worse situation, but
the thing is,
Debenhams, you know, because it's all proportional, right? Relative to your earnings and everything else. Yeah. But the reality is, you know, they're paying a 5% dividend yield. So, you know, a lot of that sort of free cash that's coming off that business is going to pay that dividend. It's not sort of chunkering down the debt level. I'd be a bit cautious. I'm not looking to bottom fish here.
Yeah, okay. So one company I know you want to cover is actually a riser today, which is unusual. Lloyds.
Is Lloyds. And, you know, it's a favourite because I guess either people have held it all the way through or, you know, they've kind of perceived the government helping to bail it out, put a bit of a backstop against it. And I think I take the view, I'm quite positive towards Lloyds. I do like most of the UK mainstream banks. You know, we had the Barclays numbers out on Wednesday. I thought they were all right too. And Lloyds, when I look at their progress today, it's pretty good because they're doing all the simple stuff correctly. They're generating capital, which is good. The costs are under control as they shift towards a more digital online offering. They've reiterated all their numbers and the dividend is progressive. You put all of that together, you know, more profit, less costs, generating capital. I think actually it deserves a higher share price. And I've done a few sort of semi-complex numbers on these financials, and I keep on coming up with about 70p a share as a target for Lloyds. So actually, I'm a buyer here. And despite the fact that it's rising today on a generally down day for the market, I would still be a buyer or a holder of Lloyds here. You're getting that decent dividend yield, but you're actually getting a bit of progress. I think, though, what could throw them off is clearly related with things like the mortgage and credit card markets, because they're two areas they're highly exposed to. I think, though, the thing with Lloyds is that they've got a good legacy mortgage book. They don't need to be too aggressive in chasing new market share. So I think they're well set there. Probably only area where they could get tripped up is probably credit cards, where they have been a recent acquirer of assets, the MBDA assets. So it may prove over time that's not quite as profitable or smart a decision as could otherwise be. But at this moment in time, they're doing okay there. People are still paying their credit card bills. They're still paying their mortgage. And I think that broadly continues for the next little while. So my feeling is, the financials, at least in terms of the big banks who are not having to chase a lot of new business, it either comes to them already or they've got big legacy books. I think they're okay at the moment, and I would be a buyer of Lloyds and, as it happens, Barclays at prevailing prices.
Yeah, so I've just been looking at the charts of Lloyds, Barclays and HSBC, and they're all similar sort of price action. They've got basically a rise from the sell-off we had in 2016, you know, and they topped out pretty much to the start of this year, and now they're all sort of in a bit of a downtrend there. So what are the thoughts? Why is that happening then? Why are they in this? What's the worries here?
Well, I guess the worry would be beyond sort of the inevitable use of the sort of the Brexit domestic UK economic growth fear. Mm. I guess the worry would be particularly with Lloyds and a little bit with Barclays because of the importance of UK lending, be it mortgage lending or be it corporate lending. If you have lower economic growth in the UK, that puts pressure on that, particularly at a time when you've got things like the Challenger banks all sort of sprouting and trying to take that market share away. So you've got that kind of potential perfect storm of, you know, less growth, so more defaults and problems with lending at a time when competition is rising too. So that would be the fear factor. I think, though, if you saw things like a Brexit deal, because that would reduce uncertainty. One of the areas that would be a beneficiary of that would be the financials, particularly the large ones. And I would say, looking at, if I look at the underlying quality of the Lloyds or Barclays numbers versus, let's say, something like a Metro Bank, which we also reported this week, I think the difference is Lloyds and Barclays have these really big legacy books, which with particularly with things like mortgages, so long as they remain reasonably competitive, they will retain, and they will always naturally attract custom just because of the longevity of their names. And so I think they're not quite as exposed to some of those pressures as the challenger banks. So for me, when I look at the outlook, a little bit more Brexit certainty, a little bit less angst over UK economic growth, and things like real wage growth coming in or continuing to sustain in the UK market, these are all things which will allow the banks to trade closer towards more sensible values. And I think for Lloyds, that's about 70p. You know, I've done the numbers, and it's not pushing the envelope too hard for it to get there. It has been there before. And my feeling is that's where we're heading progressively over the next year. So for me, from an income or a capital growth perspective, I would be a buyer here.
Yeah. Do you know, one final thing I just want to mention. I mean, yesterday, BT was up 4% to £2.50. It was like that. It hasn't been that high since February. They announced, of course, a new CEO today. He's from Worldpay. He's getting a £1.1 million deal, nice bonuses and all that stuff as well. It's a bonus up to 300-400%. And the share price is off close to 3% today.
Yeah, well, I think it's sort of, you know, with BT, it's up one day, down the next. And, yeah. You know, I think it's a smart appointment, though. The Worldpay guy is a good guy. He's done a good job there, just the right sort of appointment I think they needed. And it's all been done in a fairly orderly fashion. I think it's 1st of February he takes over when the current CEO exits, having delivered the quarterly results on the 31st of January. So there you go. What a job to do as your finale as BT CEO for Gavin Paterson. No doubt all of the bad stuff will be heaped onto him, and the new guy can start with a clean slate, which I think is just what BT needs. So I think at the very least it's a hold here, and a potential recovery play next year.
Yeah. But do you know what? I'm just thinking of the ego of CEOs that look at the share price when actually they're fired or they're brought in, see what happens, you know? And when you see a share price, I mean, you must put in context, you know, 4% on a share like BT, a FTSE 100 is a big rise. So it's going to come off a little bit the next day. But nevertheless, I bet he's just checked the share price and see it's down 2.33%. Oh, okay. Well, the market wasn't welcome that then. But anyway.
He'll be asking when are his options going to get vested or whatever. I guess he'll be asking, but there you go.
Marvellous stuff. Chris, thanks for that, and we'll catch up next week, fella.
Sounds a plan. Bye-bye.
OK, it's time for the top five most followed companies on Vox Markets in the last 24 hours. They are, at five, Faron Pharmaceuticals, F-A-R-N, a ticker there. At four, Jangada Mines, J-A-N. At three, totally, it's T-L-Y. At two, Oriole Resources, O-R-R. And number one, most followed company, had a bit of a profit warning, accounting irregularities, or they've gone back over and looked at a bit of a black hole in their accounting, or they've overstated. It's U Group. That's Y-U dot. Okay, top five most liked RNSs are as follows. At five, Oriole Resources. Exploration confirms significant gold animalization. Anomalism. That's what I should be saying, not animalization. Don't know what that word is. But it could be something. At four, Main Energy, distribution of Petrotech shares and warrants. At three, Arc Minerals, director share purchases, Nick von Schending. At two, Rehoboth Resources, Danube Petroleum investment update. And there's a little piece on them on the website today. And at number one, Horizonte Minerals, feasibility study announcement date. That's HZM. That's it for the podcast. Thanks for listening. Muchos apreciados.
The Vox Markets Podcast with Justin Waite. Nothing in this podcast is intended as investment advice, and the people in this podcast may hold positions in the stocks they talk about. Do not buy anything based solely on a tip or recommendation. Please do your own research.